So, you know, which is more fair, to let it be like, there's all sorts of things like, you know, the Humane Society says it's more humane to cut your cat's balls off to make sure that they don't spread, you know, so you don't have this overpopulation issue. And I think to myself, well, I wouldn't want someone to cut my balls off, so I'm not doing that. So Mike, I'm proud to say my cat still has his balls.
Well, of course, you wouldn't want somebody to put a litter of your children into a gas chamber because you can't afford to feed them either, as happens, right. As happens with cats. So, you know, I think there's so many moral issues going on, you know, wherever we look, you know, there's always some kind of moral dilemma. And I wonder, you know, as just kind of in general, like in quotation marks, the human race, are we even really anywhere near as moralistic or capable of caring and being nice to each other and having strong communities just in general as perhaps we once were? I mean, I was speaking to my producer and his wife the other night, and they said that air conditioning destroyed community in the south of the United States. Mm-hmm. Namely because back in the day when it was hot at night, everybody would be out sitting on their porches or taking a brief stroll or something like that to cool off. And you would pass people by on their houses and go, hey, Jed, hey, Jethro, what's going on, man? I'm just polishing my shotgun. You know, what's up with your family, man? And, you know, there'd be some kind of interaction that happens by proxy out of the fact that people can't just sit indoors and remain cool. And now that they can, nobody knows even their neighbor.
Just you know, I think we could also take this the step further. I think it's an excellent point, by the way. This is part joke and part harsh truth. Isn't the ultimate goal to know thyself? We're complaining we don't know our neighbors. We don't even know ourselves.
Well, and also it takes a village to raise a child, and right. often through the interaction with other people, they will teach you things about yourself. Mm-hmm. And if you're forever looking inwards, essentially what you're doing is you're limiting outward influence, and the more outward influence you limit to yourself, the more you're limiting just yourself in general. You know, kind of like every person that you meet rubs off on you in some way and influences you in some way. So, for instance, me, I hang out with people of all walks of life of different areas of research. My friend Jono was, you know, whatever your social circle you hang out with determines kind of which part of your personality you take from them or they take from you, vice versa. And I was just thinking to myself, you know, all these people that I talk to, all these guests that I interview, you know, they're basically some of the top thinkers of our time, in my opinion. So in so doing, I'm being told fairly regularly sometimes when I go on other people's shows that I'm very wise and all of this kind of stuff. And it's of no surprise to me that I've become a lot wiser, because all of the people that I interact with, I feel that in some part are wiser than me in certain areas. And so thus I grow.
Yeah, very well said. So it's such a pleasure to get to do this. This sort of work, whatever you want to call this, is a really weird little honor, because you get to interact with so many people that are doing something different or thinking different things, who've researched, maybe, you know, even if you want to say they haven't researched more than me, but they've researched something different than you, or, you know, whatever. No one's ego is here. So, but just to say, so everyone's diving into their own little rabbit holes, doing their own brand of research, coming at it from their perspectives. And by sharing all these things, I really do feel like we're all hopefully getting a lot wiser by being able to share these thoughts and different perspectives and things like that. It's hugely rewarding, personally.
Well, the experiment of America was the grand experiment. It was, I think, all the most intelligent people recognizing that there needed to be an arena for all the cultures to congregate, and that's the melting pot. It's the alchemical fire that takes everything from every direction and tries to create the agent which would take the old world into the future. because they recognized that with borders and kingdoms and nations, there was a logjam. It wasn't going to go anywhere. So the internet now is the child of that experiment. This is a pure thinking melting pot where you can have conversations that even if they go into the most vile and violent kind of attacks, you can't shoot them from across the screen. You can't hurt them. There's a simmering that takes place that allows the thoughts to get past that emotional infancy and for ideas to start really interacting with each other. This is the whole concept of the meme, you know, that these are the genetic components that we're freeing and sending out into the thought stream via the internet, and they're combining.
Continue.
Well, no, it's just that we're on the cusp of a genesis of a new way of interacting that is what I conceive of as the Star Child at the end of 2001. It's the synthesis of everything, but it's genetic and it's mathematical and it's malleable. And it allows us to consider things from 360 degrees of interpretation, but to actually come to make it into something that we can actually use, you know, that's the thing, that you could actually apply it. That's why all these applications are in smartphones. We're searching for the ultimate application. You know, religions were just different forms of applying wisdom and trying to instruct people. Shows like this, the fact that you're in New Zealand and that, you know, Alan's in Virginia, David's in California, I'm in Chicago. The fact that it cost us pennies today to get this dialogue going, where before not only would it have taken thousands and thousands of dollars, it would have taken months, maybe years for all of us to travel into one location to share this memetic material. But we're doing it instantly today. So this event, the moment that we realized we existed, that we thought a certain way, this event should have taken place 5 years from now, but it's taking place today. That's the time machine that the internet provides. We transcend space and time to get to the heart of the matter. So, like, I don't know. Right now, the only political thing that scares me would be the shutting down of the internet. Or the only economic thing that scares me is if the prices of the internet skyrocket up, but yet they seem to be going down. So I don't know.
You see something positive coming out, you know?
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Another thing that I found about the internet is that people have a separation socially from the consequences of their actions. Have you noticed how people almost have no qualms about being real rude and saying mean and hurtful things on the internet because they know that there aren't going to be any consequences to their actions by saying that?
Fuck you, Vinny. You're an asshole. Vinny, I hate you.
No, like you get these YouTube comments or Facebook comments and things like that, and the people are just like mindless brain spasms who throw out all this insult and things like that. Whereas, have you ever heard the term "say that to my face"? You know, people are too cowardly to say things to their face. And also conversely, you can say things to people in an email or online or whatever, and if it's written down, the tone of the voice is taken out of it. The vein of communication and the intention in which it's said can sometimes be lost. So I could perhaps say, this happened to me with Dr. Judy Wood. You know, I like Dr. Judy Wood and Where Did the Towers Go and all of this kind of stuff. And she was supposed to be scheduled to come on the show one day. And she was being a kind of a bit difficult because I'd messed up and I was trying to, you know, accommodate her and just like, and she kept just repeating something, and I was like, are you a bit tired? You know, out of genuine concern. And she took that as an insult, and has never spoken to me since. And I got an email from a friend of hers threatening to sabotage my show and prevent me from getting guests like Max Kaiser and Jesse Ventura, who are personal friends of theirs, and that I'll never be a professional radio show host if I go around insulting people and never contact me again. So this person took one thing that I said that was said with good intentions, blows it totally out of proportion, and indeed I have to deal with consequences for the rest of my career because I cared about somebody and they didn't care enough to ask me what I meant by something because they didn't hear the tone of my voice.
Yeah, I think that's so hard, is to all these things, right? Sarcasm, intent, you know, just again, there's no, the taking the tonality out of it really does a hard, puts a hardship on it, because there's so many of the finer emotions that you can't express. And I've had fights with my wife over something, you know, she sent me a text message, oh, we're supposed to meet somewhere, send me a text message, and then I respond to something, and it's like, all right, I have, you know, 100 characters to express something, I'm sorry I didn't express it as eloquently as possible, or vice versa, you know, where I'm thinking, why is she being like that? It's a text message, you know, you can't, you're reading into it what you think. There's no tonality, there's no context very often. It's very, very difficult. And I think this is, you know, I make this point, I think on last week's show, saying, what can you even do? You add a smiley face? Like, our best thing is we're like emoticons. Or you know, if you put a smiley face, are you a bit tired? Smiley face. Would she know that you were joking, or would that be more insulting because she thinks you're making fun of her? You're having fun at her. You know, all these things you can't do. It's hard when I'm having a conversation like this.
How dare you emoticon me like that, you motherfucker?
Did you use the winking smiley face? Oh, I hate that one.
So, you know, I think it's like people really, really, you kind of choose what you interpret from what other people say in a lot of cases. Me personally, I choose to interpret what people say as positive until it's obviously not. You know, you know what I'm saying? And that way, 99% of my conversations wind up being positive, because 99% of the time I'm being communicated with, and of course, 99% of statistics are made up. most of the interactions that I have with people wind up being positive because I deliberately, intentionally interpret the things that they say as coming from a good, pure, and decent place. And as a result, I have very few toxic relationships. There are other people out there, on the other hand, who I will speak to who will not interpret the things that I say in the same way that I would interpret the things they say, and they get angry at me for absolutely no reason.
Aren't you just interpreting that they've interpreted for no reason? Maybe they feel like they have a reason, maybe.
Well, the thing is, I'll say something really nice to somebody and they fly into a rage and never talk to me again.
Yeah.
You know, it's when you're dealing with that kind of stuff, it's like you just wish sometimes that people would just accept you, or that people would get you, and that you wouldn't have to pussyfoot around, you wouldn't have to preface everything that you say, and you wouldn't have to explain after you've said something what you meant by what you said. If somebody would just automatically think positively and accept what you've got to say, then your communications, I believe, become much more efficient, because you don't have to fuck around assuming that somebody might be insulting me.
What I think you're talking about, Vinny, used to be known as road rage, and it was best illustrated when you'd be out in the road, encased in your little metal box, driving. If a certain mindset would allow you to interpret people's actions on the road, you might think the guy's an asshole trying to cut you off, but maybe there's somebody in the passenger side who's sick and they're trying to get to the hospital, or they're racing to get or who knows. But people, road rage became that sort of minority, very ego-driven, this motherfucker is fucking with me, that makes them a shithead, I'm going to try to run them off the road. When there was that sort of narrative never existed outside of the confines of that automobile. And I think once they were able to put a name on it, road rage, people became conscious of it. And I think that the absolute ridiculous kind of fatalities that emerged out of this sort of ego-driven telekinesis of understanding what is happening went down. So I think with YouTube or comments on the internet, once people came up with the name of trolling and or that kind of thing, people were able to kind of have a firmer grasp on identifying what kind of comments they should put stock in and which kind of comments they could kind of eliminate. So I think that the precursor to internet communication was this car language, you know, that everyone consciously or unconsciously was reading every time they were out in the road. Internet language is a type of language. I think when you really get to know someone, when you really have a firm dialogue that extends over a period of time, which oddly enough, you might spend more time getting to know somebody on the internet than you ever did in your real life. You know, acquaintances that you might believe are friends. The fact that we can accurately communicate via just words on a screen, where you can pick up inflections of sarcasm or inflections of, hey, are you doing okay? And you could make that that leap to understanding and read through the script. It's there if you want it, if you have that sort of connection with the person. And that's sort of the triumph of spirit over matter, in that it can actually bleed through the screen. So
I was just thinking about this.
I don't know, growing pains, you know?
Well, I was thinking about this the other day. Like, if I was to ever run for politics, and I probably never will, there'd be a couple of ways that I might want to do it. Like, firstly, I might want to run as a member of the clown party and dress up in a big clown outfit, you know, red nose, rainbow wig, giant shoes and stuff like that, and go, vote for me, everybody. I'm way less corrupt than the rest of these clowns. And the second way of doing it would be, don't vote for me, ladies and gentlemen. I will not solve your problems. Don't vote for any of the other people on this platform either. They won't solve your problems. Instead of going out and waiting in line for 4 hours to a voting booth for a system that doesn't give a fuck about you, go talk to a random stranger and be nice to them and try to do something for them that they can't do for themselves. You become the government, okay? Good vibes and courtesy between strangers, I think, is a far more powerful political tool than any amount of legislation and force at the barrel of a gun. It's the good little things that people do for each other just because it's the right thing to do that really keep the evil at bay. And even so much as yesterday, I don't know. Sometimes when I'm driving, I go away with the fairies and I change lanes without thinking about it or whatever. And I think it's like when you're indicating to get into somewhere, the person has a choice whether or not to let you in, whether or not to slow themselves out and to slow down their journey in order to let you in. And when you're driving, you're limited to extremely simple communication. So you've got your indications and the things that are actually mechanical. But if you're having some kind of a human interaction, it's usually hand signals like a thumbs up or a wave or something of that nature. And I got let in twice, even though I fucked up kind of while driving, these people actually kind of slowed down and let me into the traffic and things like that. And I'd give them a wave and they give me a bit of a wave, and it actually made me feel good. Like, it made me feel really good, not only to be let in, but also to acknowledge that person for doing so and for them to acknowledge me back and to accept my thanks to them, you know? And that happened 2 or 3 times. And usually I'll be the one who's doing that for other people when I'm driving around. I'll see somebody who's trying to cross the street and one side of the traffic is just non-existent, and the other side of the traffic is just completely just bumper to bumper. There's no way this person's ever going to be able to turn into this little side bay without somebody literally taking the initiative to put on the brakes for a little bit, allow traffic to back up for just a second. Just a second, so that one person doesn't have to sit there for 5 minutes waiting for a little break. And I'm normally that person. I slow down, flash my lights at them, and let them go through, because I understand that only a tiny little thing, just a tiny little thing, a little bit of courtesy can really mean a lot to somebody. It can give them a lot of good vibes. And it's just courtesy between strangers, I think, is one of my favorite things really to do in life. I remember, what was it? You know Dickies clothing? You know Dickies workwear, yeah. Stuff like that, jeans and all that? Well, the son of the CEO of Dickies New Zealand, I met on the street, and he had been giving out free Dickies clothing on the main street of Auckland, New Zealand. You know, just free clothing. Somebody comes up to him, he's like, "Yeah, have a pair of jeans, have a t-shirt, have this, have that, the other." And somebody fucking mugged him and took all the clothes off of him, right? And stole his weed and his wallet. Right? And I had a joint in my pocket and $10. And I gave it to him so he could get a taxi home and have a smoke so that he wouldn't have to feel quite so bad about that. So I was able to destroy what could have potentially been a terrible experience for him that would have manifested a hate and a fear of just general people around him simply by taking the initiative. I can help this person. And because I chose to, he was so overwhelmingly overjoyed, despite the fact that he'd been mugged.
I think if people walked around the street handing out joints to people in tough situations, this world would be a better place. Hell yeah. I need to put the brakes on this conversation for a second, because it's actually a really funny segue to trying to bring someone else in or let someone else in. I have a guy on Skype right now. Vinny, he actually contacted you. This gentleman is from France. His name is Guillaume. He had contacted you and suggested me as a guest on your radio show. This gentleman, his name is Guillaume. He had apparently contacted you, said, "Hey, you should have Alan on your show," and that worked out that way. And he and I have actually never spoken. And while we were doing this call, he hit me up on Skype and said, "Hey, are you around to talk?" And I said, "Well, actually, it's funny you should ask. I'm talking to Vinny. Maybe we'll bring you in later in the show." So I told him to hold off a little bit, but I think we're about an hour and a half in. I want to just kind of bring him into the call if no one else minds, see if we can get him in here.
Well, I think this is a nice segue, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, I love conversations that are free form. If you ever, I don't know how to say this, but it's something like forcing a good conversation to happen sometimes. You ever feel like that? Like you're the one who actually is taking the initiative to make a good conversation happen? In fact, I got criticized about that once by a friend of mine, Terry. He's no longer my friend, but he says, "Vinny, you're always trying to force good conversation on people." I was like, "Fuck, sorry, bro." Yeah. What a bastard of me.
I'm sure as a radio host, you have to do that sometimes, though. If someone's not really, you know, you have a guest on and you say, "So, tell me about such and such." And they go, "Yep, this is, got a new book out about why it's bad that something about crop circles." You know, it's like, I need you to give me a little more than that.
Yeah. In fact, that's how I run my show format. Is it's like you just wind your guest up and let him go. And I barely even ask questions per se. I found that the best conversations aren't one where it's an interview where a person's asking the questions and asking the questions and asking the questions and things like that. I think some of the best conversations is when I ask a question of myself or make an explanation. And then the other person responds with one of theirs.
Guillaume, we need you to lower your speaker or put in headphones or something. Get an echo there.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm gonna try it.
All you gotta do is just turn down your speakers.
Does it work like that? Is it better?
Yeah, I think that's better.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I just turned into out. You hear me now?
Yep.
Yes.
Is it okay? Fully okay. Okay. Great. So.
Welcome.
Hello, and welcome. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, hello. Yeah, thank you for...
Oh, it's a pleasure to be joined by you. I was saying to Vinny, it's really a funny synchronicity is that you contacted me today while I'm speaking to Vinny. You're actually the one who put us into contact with each other. And I think we just lost him. So
that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
He's got a little exclamation mark next to his name.
Yeah, I've never seen that.
I've never actually seen before.
He has an older version of Skype. hasn't updated it recently because we're probably all on the 5.1 or more recent kind of thing.
Are you able to see that, or that's what that symbol means?
That's what that symbol means. He's got an out of date one. If you have an out of date Skype, your video won't be able to work on group conferences like this because I've got an owned Skype account that I paid for. So you're capable of doing more than one video feed on any conversation. Like if you've got any more than two people on a conversation and you don't have a paid account, you can't do video at all.
Right.
And if you've got a paid account, you can have up to 10 people with video, and any more than that, it doesn't matter. You can just have, I think, what's the most people we've ever had on a call? I think it might be about 30 or 40 or 50 people or something on a call, but I don't know.
Wow. That's a lot.
Yeah, it is.
So, Guillaume, are you there?
Yeah, finally. Okay, I just lost your sound just before, and I just heard Vinny talk about Skype and the paid offer that enables you to more than two people. That's right, but I also think that there are alternatives, you know, and we are not obliged to use Skype and via Linux or type of. OS like that, you can find easiest way to bring many people, and I think in a better use and with a better flow. But that's only my point of view, and I got to work on it because I found many people that has that issue, not to be able to have more than two speakers with a video if they have not a paid version of Skype. Did you get this, guys?
Yes. I always found the paid version of Skype has been really handy for me because I like to record webcam. Ultimately, it brings so much more dimension, to the radio show. You know, being able to see somebody's expressions, really, in and of itself, makes communication more complete, I think. And in radio, where expressions on people's faces and things like that are just kind of lost on you. You sort of have this imagination, and a lot of people tell me, you know, I don't look how they imagined I'd look, and it's like, well, that's because you imagined it instead of just looking at me, bro.
That's that's very much true because first when I got to your show, Vinny, and looked at it. The first thing that got me is that it was true. We were facing people, looking at their face, their expression, as you said, and that makes a real difference, really, you know. And the first time I've seen Alan, in fact, was on your show because you had the webcam plugged. So, yeah, maybe the price is worth for a radio hoster in order for people to be able to show their face and to see their expression live, which is not oftenly the case in radio shows.
And you know, you're familiar with the term having a face for radio? Well, I think I'm probably one of the few radio show hosts in the world who actually does webcam, like a straight on kind of thing, because a lot of people can find it quite distracting. In New Zealand, there's a number of different radio stations that do have a webcam that you can look live on their websites and things like that while the broadcasts are going. But the webcam's not right in front of them. You can barely even see their face. They're usually like up on the corner of a wall or something like that, or they're like sort of behind them or sort of over here. You know, it's not like a direct address. They don't look into the camera or whatever, and it's just kind of like, I always wanted to bridge this gap between the visual and the audio, which is basically what television is really all about. And people in general, have you noticed that listening audiences are mostly a lot older? If you've ever listened to talk radio late at night and to talkback and things like that, you will be overwhelmed by the amount of elderly people that are calling in almost exclusively, kind of thing. Has anybody else noticed that? You know, because it's a much older medium.
Oh yeah,
that they perhaps grew up with. And have you noticed that most of the things that you grow up with, you never grow out of?
People doesn't like to change,
especially old people. I've found. They literally don't like change, because change is dangerous. Change is a young man's game.
It's kind of like going out in a journey out of home. You know, you want to keep staying at sweet home and don't move because you're too scared of losing a bit more. That's why, especially old people, are scared about changing.
Yeah.
It'd be like asking Bob Dylan to start doing hip hop. I think with a few years, Bob Dylan could pull it off. You know, he's that good. But it would be a very scary first few years.
He tried that electric guitar thing, and that sure didn't work. So I don't
know.
he's sounding more and more like a rodent every day. It's kind of, he's looking more like one too.
Was it Billy Joel tried to do rap and that ended up as "We Didn't Start the Fire"? No, I'm completely serious. He basically tried to write a rap song. That's what he came up with, and then realized he couldn't bug a rap. So he's like, "All right, well, I'll just kind of make it a Billy Joel song or whatever." But but Bob Dylan, I think, could do it.
He just needs the right DJ.
That's funny, because I was actually just thinking of Bob Dylan right before that, because when you were talking about the old people on the radio, I visualized those like bureaucratic guys. I can't remember what they're called, from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, who always want to recite poetry.
Vogons.
Really bad. And they just, the Vogons. They just go on and on. And then I was considering immediately, I just found out recently that where Douglas Adams got the number 42, why he chose that, what the meaning was of what that meant, why it's the answer to life, the universe, and everything, was actually in reference to blowing in the wind. The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind to how many roads. It's like how many roads a man must walk down before he can call him a man. His answer to that was 42 roads, which is still random and doesn't make any sense, but that's actually what it was in reference to. I saw that in an interview, which I was like, wow, that's interesting. And Bob Dylan, of course, is BD, which is 24, which is 42 backwards. But
well, hold on a second. So the answer is, to the ultimate question in the universe, I just made shit up.
Yeah, that seems like that would be the answer, right?
Yeah.
If you could actually like meet God face to face, you know, and just like ask him, so what's the meaning of life? I just kind of threw some shit together, thought I'd see what happened.
Yeah. Why did you create us? Why all the complications? Why all the wars? I was just making shit up, you know? It's like God separate from his own consequences.
I was just fucking with you, as Bill Hicks says.
Or it should be just like, did I create anything?
God's running around burying fossils. I am killing me.
No, if you do something perfect, people won't be sure you've done anything at all.
Futurama?
Yeah.
I was thinking about Futurama earlier. We were talking about the idea of the lion. Does the lion decide I'm not going to do these horrible things anymore? I think it was actually on Futurama they had the vegan lion. Do you remember that? It was like it's just like a little one-off thing.
I remember a Gary Larson, the Far Side calendar, and they had these. They had this lion just pouncing like onto a pumpkin, and there's these other lions sitting there, just like Gerald's just trying to make vegetarian more exciting. And I saw this other one, with these two lions sitting in a bush, and one you know kind of nudges the other one. He's like, "Dude, do the human mating call," and one goes, I'm so wasted.
On Futurama, they did a vegan lion, which was just basically this lion where you could see, like, all its rib cage, and it was, like, breathing dust, and it was just, like, completely fading away. And they're like, look, we've managed to make this lion, you know, completely cut meat out of its diet or something. Which, of course, does not work with a feline. Spotty. So, some things are just made to kill.
Yeah. Yeah. Like F-16s.
Yeah, exactly. F-16s, lions, you know.
Presidents.
Certain. Presidents. Presidents, prime ministers, and kings. Let us build them shelves that they might fight amongst themselves.
Clergy. Was that made for pedophilia? I was saying, never mind.
That's a form of death.
Yeah, I guess so. And in fact, there's big you know exposés about that kind of shit being thrown out all the time. I think I interviewed a guy on the show. Forget his name, but he's investigating Canadian church child trafficking and rings and things like that. And they just killed thousands upon thousands of Native Canadian, you know, Eskimo type people. And you know, nobody gives a fuck about them. Nobody gives a fuck. And I've just wondered how much do you want to feel, right?
Wait, Vinny, let me ask you a question, because let's say I took one of those Canadian Eskimo children into my home to protect them from the pedophile murderous priest. Mm-hmm. Would Bill tell me that they've become my slave?
No, you are their guardian.
I was taking a reference back to the cat. If you take the cat into your house,
I'm considering it, Alan.
Yeah, if I saved a poor Eskimo child, would you tell me that I've made that child my slave?
Well, it depends. Again, like I said, slavery is the state of mind, and ergo, if you have an air of ownership over that child or over that cat. Then it, regardless of whether or not that cat believes it's free or that child believes it's free, if you believe that you own it and you can prevent that child or cat from doing what they want, then in a way, yes, they're totally enslaved. But if you're just doing it out of the goodness of your heart and they're free to come and go as they please and you don't really have any attachment or ownership for them, there really is no slavery. And I wish that was the case for employment. But in many cases, if I always felt that my employers felt like they owned me.
Well, I brought up that movie Django earlier, which is in the news because of Tarantino's choice of historical arena, and that it deals with slavery, and he uses the word nigger liberally, and people have a very It hurts them emotionally to have to try to process it, to say, do I have to spend time with this to see what the value is in it? And I think that, you know, ultimately Tarantino's message in that movie is is a commentary on institutions like the NFL and Hollywood, where if you have a talent that you're born into and you work at it and get to a certain level, the higher you get, the more chains that you have put upon you. So if you're an artist in Hollywood and your art is telling you to say a certain thing, and all of a sudden financing drops out, or actors drop out, or studios drop out, and all of a sudden you have no outlet for your art, but if you censor it or change it or adapt it, then all of a sudden the money and all that stuff comes through. Well, this is the whole Dave Chappelle thing. This is the whole realizing that the higher you get, the less free you become if you're an artist or an athlete, because you are asked to do things that you never thought you would be asked, that you are owned, that the contract you signed was not something that freed you, it was something that enslaved you. And I think if you look at that film that Tarantino has made, he puts the message in an exploitation film for a reason. It's very spelled out for me. It's very clear. It's a very brave movie, because he's warning people. If you think the road to freedom is in the football fields, or in Candyland, which is obviously Hollywood, you know, you will have to become an actor. You will have to be doing somebody else's business for the paradise that you think is awaiting you.
I think this is why COINTELPRO and the FBI really actively engage within Hollywood, because the most important thing, I think, throughout history for people in terms of evolving human consciousness or changing the way people think about things has really been through the entertainment industry. It's not really entertainment. It's life lessons being taught in the stories, like in the movie V for Vendetta, when they say, what was it? Great writers use lies to tell the truth, whereas politicians use lies to cover the truth up.
Yeah, amen. And that's why I think that's why I have such a hard time dealing with the sort of wing. And again, I'm going to be very clear when I say this. Like, there is a certain wing within the specifically like YouTube conspiracy genre that's everything is just got to be labeled as part of the plan. And it seems to me that there is a great number of artists who really are trying to put truth out there, using lies to spread truth, or just, you know, dressing it up in fiction to put some truth out there, and to just completely disregard every attempt they make to put truth out there as being part of some bigger system. Granted, the institution's pretty damn devious. I have no love of Hollywood, but... you know, I do think we can't write off every artist's attempt at doing something to elevate man out of the situation. It's a real shame. It's sort of a catch-22, because if the only way you can get the message out there is to deal with an insidious system, then, you know, is your message already perverted? These are, you know, fantastic questions that we can debate. I think the intentions, it's very clear to me that many people have great intentions. Of course, we know that the road to hell is also paved with good intentions, or so I've heard. So,
And it just reminds me of in Hollywood, you know, what these allegations of Hollywood MK Ultra control and things like that. And Randy Quaid came out and talked about star whackers, that if you're a big Hollywood actor and you start coming out for the truth and things like that, you'll either be killed or demonized really, really badly, or something of that nature. Corey Feldman, you know, former child star, comes out and he says that pedophilia is rampant in Hollywood, that it's the big secret. Tila Tequila comes out and says these similar things, and it's like, you notice this undercurrent if you have a look, like one person isolatedly, even if they're a famous person saying something by themselves, looks like a crazy person. But if that person, as well as a number of others, and then it becomes way, 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 way more difficult to deny these things. And it's like, hold on a second. Is the thing that is entertaining us mostly And hence the thing that is influencing us and our thoughts to a large degree, controlled by murderous, pedophile scum. And what kind of ramifications and what kind of, shall we say, effect does that have on mass culture? And are we getting worse as a culture? I mean, were there mass shootings back in, say, the 1930s or something, where nearly every kid in Texas was taking a gun to school?
There were mass murders of people put in gas chambers in the 1930s.
And that was also incidentally done in a gun ban zone.
Yeah. So. I think it's interesting. We started this conversation with the idea of, earlier before you came on, Vinny, there was like some part of a conversation about, was there value to be found in, say, in the Catholic Church, the teachings of the Catholic Church, minus the scumbaggery, the control, the basic lies? Is there a way to filter out all the other things that have been put on it and still find that kernel of truth? And I think with when it comes to any kind of media, that's essentially what you have to do, is you know that there are some pretty dastardly people who are trying to control this this system, to control the media that's put out there. But you can try and distill out what the message really is under all that stuff. It's just a lot of work if you're willing to do it, or if it's worth doing.
Well, let's say you take the Ten Commandments. Let's say you take the Ten Commandments, for instance, and you apply it to, say, U.S. presidents who claim that they are Christian. Okay, so let's say George W. Bush, thou shalt not kill. I will invade Iraq, kill a million Iraqis. Is he a Christian? No. Bill Clinton sleeps with or gets his knob slipped by Slutsky Lewinsky. Thou shalt not cover thy neighbor's Slutsky. No, he's not Christian. Okay. So on and so forth. All these people who claim to be something have actions which violate the very principles by which you could prove that I am such a person with such a moral authority as to be the leader of your country and things like that. And it's become widely known amongst a lot of Christian pastors and ministers that I've spoken to, at least, that there exist two branches of Christianity: those who claim that they're Christian and those who are Christian, those who follow actual principles of it. Like, for example, I think one thing that was real funny, one of them said to me, okay, this is God's law. This is all the laws to govern you and stuff like that. It's all in this one little book here. And I go, oh my God, that's about an eighth the size of the Patriot Act alone. Yeah. You know, simplicity, I think, is a hell of a lot easier. It's like when you complicate the amount of things that are governing your conduct to such minutia as to have thousands upon thousands of pages of legislation just so that you can surveil people with warrantless wiretapping, there's something inherently fucked up about that.
But the fact that you can call that patriotism is the same way that you can call that, you know, someone can call it spirituality to say, oh, I'm anti-abortion, but I'm pro-death penalty and pro-war. You know, we have to, you have an excuse. We need to go kill a million Iraqis, even though I'm pro-war.
You need the babies to survive so that they can fight our wars for us. It's very, very plain logic.
Yeah, it's the same kind of thing, that same logic where someone will say they're a patriot and they believe in fighting for our country, even though they're stripping every liberty and everything that the country stands for. So again, it's, you can be a patriot in name, you could be a Christian in name, or you could be something in principle. And it's always something very different. Guillaume, I know you were trying to get in here. Did you want to add something?
Yeah. In fact, that's quite funny that we're discussing that topic, because last time I was talking with Anthony Peak, and we were talking about the fact that we are indoctrinated at a very young age. And in fact, when you think that good and bad is defined at the basis of our lives, you know, to find the kernel, you know, the root one. It's quite very hard, I think. The more you grow, the more you are at some very high points, I think, modified by every way, you know. That's exactly the same that when you are trying to explain to someone how you see the red color, you're gonna say it's nearly purple, but the guy is saying exactly the same things, you know, the same difference of frequency in his eyes. So you can't really define it, you know. And I think in our society, you know, it's very hard to know that you are doing something from your own real wish, you know. And that's a real topic, you know. And sometimes it's a hard idea, but I'm thinking that maybe the trick is to think that life is important on Earth, you know. So they're going to bring you some scary death, so you are scared about death. They're going to show you that life is good when you have money. But the whole thing is they are never trying for you to escape life. They want you to stay here. Of course, we all know that they want us to work. Vinny would say that we are safe if we do it, and I pretty much agree. But yeah, all the definition, all the how can I say the operating system is plugged in at the first stage, you know. And yesterday I was discussing with another mother of my girlfriend, a friend mother, and I was talking about this and all that crap inside it, and she was telling me, but you know, if I avoid my child to see the King Lion, other child will reject him from not having seen it, and again, and then I'm gonna make it being in a lonely place, in fact, because nobody will be able to discuss with him, because he won't have any real arguments to have, and it would be just totally in a different matrix. What do you think about that, guys?
See, it's real difficult, guys, to kind of hear what you're saying. Quite a bit of distortion there, but I think what you're trying to say is that essentially people are living different lives, and instead of judging other people's life based on what that other person's life is like, they judge other people based upon what my life is like, kind of thing, and it's unfair. Is that sort of what you mean?
Yeah, sure. But also, in fact, what people are defining as good is coming from somewhere. And if you say that it's coming from your parents' education, for example, it's also coming from their education, and so on and so on. So I'm just saying that to find a root kernel, so to see the real truth and to be sure that what you are thinking is your own thinking, you know, not modified by all the arguments that you can have. I'm talking like a programmer of a computer, because we say arguments, you know, to give sense to things. And I think I'm really on the question of how can I be sure of what I'm seeing, or even of what I'm thinking, and what word to put on it.
You know, I think, you know, part of the interpretation of this is that you need kind of self-confidence. I think if you're not confident in yourself and how you feel and who you are and what you're doing, like if you don't know yourself or you don't know your past, then somebody can tell you who you are or tell you what your past is, lie to you, and you won't know the difference, kind of thing. And it leaves you well open to manipulation. And this is actually how cults work. Is you come in, and the first thing they do is they tell you everything that you thought was real was a lie, and I'm now going to to replace it with this truth. And secondly, they then put you into a herd mentality so that you're not just the only one in there that's experiencing this. So you don't have freedom of thought by yourself. Then you get into a silo mentality with everybody else. Then they start to traumatize you, and sleep deprivation or something of that nature. Same thing happens in the military, in boot camp. Same thing happens in law school, and same thing happens in medical school.
Same thing happens in your Alex Jones conspiracy world.
Exactly.
It's the same thing, the truth movement. Everything you know is a lie. I'm going to tell you what the truth is now. And now we need you to act on this truth by doing what we tell you to do. Stay up.
I think, or it might have been the day before yesterday, after I saw that Piers Morgan interview with Alex Jones, cult leader. Yeah. That is what he came across as.
You know, I know a producer on the Piers Morgan show. And so I asked her, I said, what the fuck is up with Alex Jones? Was that all an act? Just to see if, who knows, maybe cameras are off, he calms down, gets out the door. She said, no, he's a fucking psycho. And they had to call security on him. That they were freaked out. That manic energy was not the product of a showman or an entertainer. That was just exploding out of him uncontrollably.
I know people who've produced Alex Jones, who have hosted in his stead and things of this nature. And I know his cousin, and they all got a similar opinion about him. It's megalomania on top of narcissism, right? Now, be that as it may, you can't point to a single person that wakes people up to at least a different reality and puts them perhaps on a different path. Then instead of wanting to be a servitude-ridden slave to the state or stupidity or the medical industry or something like that, he gets you out of that paradigm.
But the problem is he puts you
into a new one that he controls. Yeah. Okay,
right.
If you're gonna shatter somebody's paradigm of control, don't just put them into another control paradigm, because where the fuck are you going to end up other than where you exactly are right now anyway? And you wind up getting people who get woken up by Alex Jones and they get really badly disillusioned and then go straight back into enslavement because they felt deceived.
Absolutely. That's my issue. Yeah.
Right. And then they feel very cynical about everything that gets presented after that fact, because they were disillusioned and they're like, oh, there was really not as much to that. And then there's a reaction to anything that feels of a similar nature. And so it can close people down. But then at the same time, they can move on and open up and be disillusioned repeatedly. Hopefully you get disillusioned over and over and over again. You know, ideally, that's just what can continue. Used to happen until you're just very more perceptive quicker to recognize.
What does the word disillusioned mean? It means I'm no longer operating under an illusion. It is not a bad thing. It is a good thing, although it fucking hurts.
Vinny, I had an old friend email me, someone I hadn't spoken to in many years, who saw, I guess, things I was putting on Facebook and sent me something and said something, like accused me of being disillusioned. And I said exactly that. I said, well, disillusioned, yeah, means that I'm no longer under an illusion. And they just didn't respond ever again. It was like, okay, they reached out. Hey, I see you've gone crazy. I see what you're putting on Facebook. You must have gone crazy. And I'm like, no, it means you're no longer under an illusion. I was like, what you're saying is that I'm no longer under illusion. I assume you still are. That was it.
Just using those little minor interpretations. We've come to the close up of the 2 hours. I mean, are you wanting to go longer, or are we wanting to wrap up soon enough?
You guys.
I actually got to get going, guys, and I'm doing the recording right now.
Then that's the answer.
I've got 42% of battery left.
The number 42?
Yeah.
The show is the answer to the meaning of life.
Yeah. Hey, in fact, that was funny. That was funny. The last house that I was living in was number 42, and the house across the road was number
33. Well, Vinny, you've been so gracious to be our guest again today. Is there anything you'd like to close up with, a parting message for the...
Yes. You can listen to my radio show at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and americanfreedomradio.com, and give me money there too, because like donations and subscriptions for like $5 a month or something like that. I give you ad-free archives. I'm recording this webcam and this thing too, so I'm going to put that up on YouTube and my archives page and all of that kind of stuff. And I'm producing hours upon hours of content a day. With some of the most important thinkers in the world, namely because normal conversations about nattering fucking bullshit bore the living shit out of me, and there's no fucking point. All right? I will force a good conversation to happen because I fear the alternative, much like I will not ever have a job again because I can't do it. I literally can't. I have panic attacks if I seek gainful employment, all right? I can't do it. I'm employer-phobic. And I think that people need to recognize that. If you're having a bad time in your life, that's a good thing. If you're having a good time in your life, it's actually a bad thing. The reason why this is because people who've got it good all the time never question what's going on, never are upset with it, never evolve. Those who suffer constantly are being strengthened, who are evolving and have the potential to wake up to things that they never even thought possible. And so that's my encouragement to people. If you are feeling really, really comfortable with your life, with yourself, and with all your stuff, I say purposely get out of your comfort zone and make yourself remarkably uncomfortable. Make yourself go through some kind of trauma, and you will find different directions in your life. And this is something that happened to me. It's happened to many people that do this line of work. But thing is, recognize the fact that you're damaged goods, that there has been pain and trauma and stuff like that that has stuck upon you. But just because you're damaged goods doesn't mean you should go around trying to damage other people for the shit that's already happened to you that wasn't other people's fault. Okay, just because people have betrayed your trust doesn't mean you should never trust anybody again. Because if you don't have any trust for people at all, you can't have a real relationship ever again. Okay, so that's my advice to people: trust others, but don't be a dick.
You'll be pleased to know that I'm momentarily very uncomfortable and traumatized, and I'm sure this is going to lead to my evolution. So
there you go. There is no growth without pain. I think
that's
I get fucking used to it. You know, you some people who just like, why can't everything be easy? Well, it's just, dude, you're living on planet Earth. Okay, it's not fucking possible. Get over it.
It's fucking painful.
Guillaume, thank you for joining us. I'm really glad you were able to, even for a short while. It's good to actually get to speak to you. It's good to actually speak with you. It's been too long that we have.
Absolutely. Go on. Sorry.
Bill, do you want to tell everyone we have a guest next week? I think you're pretty excited about.
Jay Widener of Cooper's Odyssey fame, Room 237, will be joining us next week. So hope everyone tunes in. Should be interesting.
Oh, please put me in contact with him as well, because I've been wanting to get Jay on my show for a while. I've even got a joke for him. You know, like you know how some people roll their joints with a trumpet on the end, kind of thing. You know how you do that with a Jay Widener?
Yeah.
That's what that's called, right? Isn't that the official name?
Thanks for joining us, Vinny, and I really hope that you come back soon and join us and keep touch, because I think this is a very good show, good energy.
Well, thank you. All right, guys. Well, you have yourselves a lovely day, and I'm just going to, I guess, prepare for my show now. Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure, everybody. Thank you all very much.
Thanks. Bye.
Adios.